They say music transcends all boundaries, language or religion or any other. My guest today is a woman who truly demonstrates the truth in that. Sonam Kalra is a multi-award-winning singer and a composer and a musician trained in both Western and Indian traditions. It's just not her musical training that overcomes barriers. A Sikh herself, her music is heavily inspired by Sufi devotional music, largely an Islamic genre. Her unique musical endeavor, the Sufi Gospel Project, which blends the many voices of faith through music, poetry, and prayer to create one universal voice of faith, has earned her worldwide critical acclaim, and she has performed in over 30 countries at prestigious festivals and venues around the world, including the Sydney Opera House. Sonam has shared the stage with the legendary musicians like Sir Bob Geldof and Sufi legend Abida Praveen, not to mention her performances for MTV Coke Studio. Welcome to the show, Sonam.
Lovely to be here.
I'm super excited to have you on the show. And all these years, I have been following you and looking at all that you've been doing in your life, which is so full of inspiration. And I think our listeners are going to love this conversation today.
So first of all, Chandra, thank you so much for having me on this lovely show. And I love the fact that it's focused on women, because I really think women need more platforms like this to be able to change the narrative, to change the narrative around women. You know, I think we're all tired of being called lovely and sweet and beautiful and pretty. And I think we all want to be recognized for our accomplishments. So thank you for having a bunch of unstoppable women here. It's really fantastic you're doing the show. And of course, I am looking forward to chatting with you, because all our interactions are so lovely.
So tell us about your musical journey, how it started. Who are the artists who have inspired you in this journey so far?
My musical journey started when I was very young. I was about 4 when my mother noticed that I had a talent for music, and she would, she would try and engage me in musical activity, whether it was learning from a teacher or sitting in her lap and listening to music. One of my earliest memories is sitting on her lap on this chair, which I often talk about in all my interviews, because it's the one chair that when I got married, I brought to the house. It's the chair I continue to sit in and make music. It was the only thing that I wanted to bring from that house. And so that chair to me still symbolizes my mother's lap, even after my mother's passed away. That chair is the chair I used to sit in her lap, and she used to make me listen to everything from Harry Belafonte to Frank Sinatra, Ella Fitzgerald, to Begum Akhtar, Farida Khanum, Parveen Sultana, Pandit Bheemsen Joshi, Kumar Gandharv, you name it. And of course, I grew up with 2 elder sisters, 2 very strong women as well. And my room was right in the center of their rooms, because I was the youngest. I got squished in between. But it was great, because from one side I would be listening to the Beatles and the other side I'd be listening to Leonard Cohen, you know. So I had all these other musical influences. I was also interested in other forms of art. So I joined art school. I trained to be a graphic designer. I joined advertising as an art director, shifted within advertising to becoming a writer, because I think more than anything, I have always wanted to be at the beginning of an idea, at the birth of an idea, at the beginning of the ideation process. So as an art director, when I felt that my bosses couldn't allow me to come up with the ideas, and they'd say a writer would come up with the idea, but you design it, I used to say, but I can come up with the idea. So very bravely, when I look back, you know, you don't consider yourself to be brave then, but when I look back, I made all these jumps, because I think one thing was clear in my heart, that I wanted to be the one creating. I wanted to be the creator. I wanted to come up with these ideas. So I shifted to being a writer. I loved being a writer. But at some point I realized that if I don't make the leap back into music, then I will look back when I'm 70 and have a regret. And one thing I don't want for sure is ever to look back in my life and say, I wish. So my musical journey started when I was 4, just to sum it up. I learned till I was possibly till in class 10. Then I gave up for my boards. Then college was very hectic. Then I started to work. So I took a long break of close to 10 to 15 years in between. And then I finally decided I wanted to come back to music. And when I did, I quit advertising to study music, which was a scary jump. And I did take initially just a 3-month sabbatical, but I think the minute I quit, I knew, even though, Shalja, when I quit, I lost my voice. I got vocal nodules, I got laryngitis, I got pharyngitis. I wasn't sure I was ever going to be able to sing, but somehow I had this strange voice again, I think my gut, my intuition, that said that Saraswati ko gale mein baithne mein samay lagta hai. I had heard this somewhere and it stayed in my heart. And I said, okay, I said to Saraswati in my head, I said, you're a woman, I'm a woman, game on. I'm going to prove to you that I'm very, very serious about this and that I really want to do this with all my heart, all my being and all my soul. And I stuck with it. I really, no matter how bad I felt, I stuck with it. It was a year before my voice came back. In the meantime, every creative opportunity that came my way, I took it. I got a chance to host a couple of travel programs, not a couple, but I did a series for the BBC and for Star World. And I said, great, you know, who else gets an opportunity to travel around the country and get paid for it and go to the places you wouldn't normally go to? So I took that on. I got to test drive cars for the BBC. I took that on. I got a chance to do theater. I took that on. I said, everything that comes my way will be a learning. And I think that's what really, really helped me. It helped me absorb so many nuances, which I'm able to then put into my music, whether it's the nuance of theater, whether it's public speaking, whether it's just, you know, just understanding the world a little bit better, understanding people, because even as a musician, you are a storyteller. You have to find a way to connect with people. You have to be empathetic. You have to hear what their hearts hear. And when you're able to do something like that, I think that you can tell your story better. So for me, it was all of that put together. When my voice finally came back, I restarted learning. And of course, then it was a wonderful period for a while. Then my mother got cancer again. Well, not again. There was another obstacle in the way. My mother got cancer, and my mother was my whole world. You know, she, my father, my family, we are very close. I lost both my parents, but it was very traumatic for that year. And so I stopped singing again because I wanted to look after her and make her better. I was determined. Even though she'd only been given 4 months to live, I was not ready for that. I was not ready to accept that. And neither was my mother or my father. So we beat it with her sheer willpower, I have to say. And she lived for 8 years, which was quite incredible. Even the doctors believed that it was a medical marvel. But you know, I'd seen her do the same when my father had got very critically ill. It's a long story, but I mean, I'll just tell you what the doctor said. You know, we can't save your husband. And she said to the doctor, she said, well, I'm sorry, I'm not willing to accept that as an answer. I'm a general's daughter. I want to take this on a war footing. I mean, my father lived when every organ was failing, he came through. And my mother had that same determination for her own illness, and we all did. So she got better. When she was better after that year, I got back. I wanted to get back to music, in fact. And then I found I couldn't sing again because, you know, for me, music is all, it's my heart's story. So it's hard for me when my heart is broken to tell that story. So I needed to heal. And I started to do, I get overwhelmed even when I talk about this. I started to do theater. It was strange again. It just came to me. And I often, when people ask me, like you, what is your musical journey? I wish I could tell a straight story, but it's hard because so many different things happened along the way. But when I started to do theater, that also just came from the universe to help me heal. And I think that one of the things I've realized through this journey of music, of course, when you start to study music, they say a lot of your learning from music comes from your kaan, from your ear, by listening. But a lot of our learnings from life come from listening. A lot of the paths we find is through listening. We have to listen. One of the biggest things we need to do is listen. Listen to what the universe is telling you. Listen to what your heart is telling you. Listen to what people around you are saying, not to be affected by them in your choices, not to be made to be afraid, you know, not that kind of listening, but listen with empathy. Listen to understand, then make your own choices.
You know, so I think when I was listening to you, I could feel you've gone through a healing process in this journey. It's been cathartic. It's been learning process. And I can see a lot of spirituality, which, you know, in the way you have observed life and how you're exchanging notes with life, if I can put it like that.
Yes, no, that's beautifully said. That's beautifully said.
It's not just been like a passion which, you know, you've been investing in it. It seems like it's so core to you who Sonam is, right? And from a 4-year-old to the way you narrated the chair story, and you know, it's just like I'm getting goosebumps listening to that entire trajectory of four years till now. But was it difficult? Was it difficult being a woman and doing all of this and keeping the flame burning all these years?
You know, I don't necessarily know if as a woman it's been difficult, because that is something that I wear very bravely, being a woman, and very proudly. And I've had friends growing up who've said, gosh, in my next life, I want to be born a man or whatever. And I say, God, how terrible. Why would you want to do that? I mean, look at what we have. We are multifaceted. We can do so many things. We can do everything men can and 50 billion things more. I mean, we can feel differently. And I was just talking recently, I'd done a series of concerts about, you know, where I had explored the concept of how even male poets, when they wrote, Sufi poets, when they wrote, or even Ghazal poetry was written, when male poets wrote, they had to don the avatar of a woman to write, because they truly believed that only women could feel that kind of love and compassion. Because even Sufi poets believed a woman's heart has that kind of love to give. Rumi, when he spoke of women, said, a woman is not a creation, she is a creator. You know, he likened her in some way to God. So when we talk of how is it difficult as a woman, I think it would be just as difficult as a man. I think choosing the path of the arts in general is difficult. It is very difficult because you are bearing your soul. You are standing there naked in front of someone with completely vulnerable. If you're a true musician or true artist, you have to open your heart. And you also not just open your heart, you have to dig deep to places that really hurt, to open them out and to share them with the world for your healing, for their healing, for a conversation, for solace. You have to, as a true artist, I believe, if you're a true artist, you must use your voices, your art, your skill to talk about things that matter. Which is why, I mean, for me personally, I will do the Sufi Gospel Project, which blends the many voices of faith to create one voice, because I want to say through my music, I want to have this message of oneness, of inclusion, of acceptance, of saying that no matter where you find your truth, you know, of belief, whether it's in a temple, a shrine, a church, a mosque, each truth, no matter what that person's truth is valid, and we must respect and accept it. Or whether if I do through my music, I create a performance on partition, it's because I believe conversations on partition must happen for the sake of preserving oral histories of people who went through partition and for the sake of subsequent generations. I believe that literature and oral histories are more valid than the histories the textbooks write, because those are changed under every establishment. They're changed under every administration. But people's stories don't change. So for people to understand and move forward, for conversations to happen forward, for us to not repeat mistakes, we must talk about those. So through my music, I talk of partition. If I want to discuss the works of Baba Bulle Shah through music, I'll do that. If I want to explore Krishna through music and the fact that, you know, the Radha-Krishna relationship was very modern, very unusual, I will do that through my music. So for me, or if there is something that I want to talk about that I feel is going wrong in the world, or if I want to talk of freedom of speech, I'll do it through the music. Equality of women, human rights, animal rights, I will do it through my music. So I think that it's really, really important as an artist to do that. The only place, if you actually make me really think, if I had to say what is hard being a woman, I think sometimes as women, we have to be a little more, you know, in order to be heard when we... If we're strong, if we're strong voiced, or if we're, you know, forceful, people are like, oh my God, look at her. She's so aggressive and she's so loud. And I've realized that used to bother me a little bit in the beginning, because I realized when I used to be ultra sweet, people would see it as a sign of weakness as opposed to a sign of she's just being kind, you know, because you're generally, most of us are empathetic, kind souls. Women are generally kind and soft. So then I realized that, you know what, it's okay. I'll be strong. I'll be loud. I'll be forceful. Let them think what they want. But that didn't last long, as in I wasn't too worried. Like I said, I don't really allow people's opinions to get to me, because I think that at the end of the day, I know that if I'm able to look in the mirror and know that I did right by myself, if I didn't hurt anyone, if I was kind, and kindness is a big thing as far as I'm concerned. If I can look in the mirror every day and know that I was kind and I was respectful of people, but I still got my message across, then I'm okay. But kindness must stay, you know, at no point must I demean anyone. So do I find it harder as a woman? Perhaps not, actually. I really do really, really love being a woman, and I love exploring and realizing more and more stuff about myself as I grow older, as I evolve. I find I have so much more, and I'm capable of so much more. My heart has space for so much more. than I think I would ever have had as a man. But I don't know because I'm not a man.
See, when I look at your music, Sonam, it's also about different faiths coming together, right? Like you said, it's a sort of a melting pot, and that's the genesis of the Sufi gospel project, if I can call it, right? It's a lot of things which have come together, and which is also reflecting your own life and your choices which you've made and what kind of inspires you, and you want to share it with the world. You know, it's your expression through creativity. But has it been there from the beginning, or it just evolved over a period of time, the gospel project?
No, so growing up in a Sikh home, Sikhism is a very syncretic faith. My parents were also very liberal. So we were very respectful of all faiths. And I think growing up in the India that I grew up in was fantastic, right? And I think we still hold on to that dream of that India, because you celebrate Eid, you celebrate Christmas, you celebrate... I mean, it's just all beautiful melting pot, as you said, of cultures, of language, of emotion. I mean, when our Hindi goes into Urdu, into English, we have our own language as well. It's fantastic, right? So part of me wanted to also talk of the fact that, you know, what does it mean to be Indian? It's not to be boxed in. It means everything, all of these things, to be Indian. Also, when I went through the 1984 riots as a child, and I remember that was the first time I felt when the anti-Sikh riots, and I just was in shock that one religion, one faith could be attacked on the basis of a label. A man, there was Beyant Singh, who was involved in the shooting of Mrs. Gandhi. And so, yes, that was wrong. But to have just killed a whole bunch of innocent people, to me, it was like the Holocaust, right? It was the same thing. And for no reason, and the scars that have stayed on for generation after generation. I mean, I sang at the refugee colony Tilaknagar about a few years ago, and there was this art installation of postcards that was hanging. And there were postcards that these children had written to the fathers they lost. It was heartbreaking. So to me, any act, I will get emotional, any act of cruelty on the basis of religion, that hurts who we are as a fabric of society. It hurts what we are as human beings. It hurts what it means to be Indian. Sorry, I was just reminded of that very moving image. But yeah, I really through my music, when everyone talked of Sufism, which is a wonderful way of life, right? It's a way of, it means an acceptance of all humanity as equal. And when I understood what it meant in this simplistic way, there, of course, there will be scholars who will tell you that it's much more. But to me, I understood it in this simplistic way of an acceptance of all humanity as equal. And for me, I thought, if that's what it means, then why can't I blend the many voices of faith together? Bhakti, gospel, Hinduism, Sikhism, Islam, you know, any other influences, contemporary poetry, conversations I have with friends that say, even the song Imagine, I often say, by John Lennon, is one of the greatest Sufi poems written, because he talks of a world without religion, without borders, without divisions. And I said, why can't I tell this very important story, share this very important message with people, just remind them how important it is for us to remember that the most important religion that we all must possess is the religion of humanity. And that, you know, religion is not God, because God really has no religion. So let's move away from that and start becoming humane and understanding that humanity is really the greatest religion. That's what I wanted to do with the Sufi Gospel Project. And when I started researching the works of poets across religions, across faiths, across languages, across region, across time even, I found so many of them were saying the same thing, whether it was Baba Bulle Shah, who was saying, Chal Bulleya, Chal Othe Chaliye, Jithe Sare Anne, Na Koi Saadi Zaat Pachane, Te Na Koi Sanu Manne. He says, take me, my friend, I want to go live in a place where everyone is blind. Because if they are blind, they will not be able to discriminate amongst us on the basis of caste, creed, gender, or religion. Or whether it was Kabir who said, Moko kahan dhunde re bande, main to tere paas mein. Na main jap mein, na main tap mein, na main vrat upvaas mein. Na mandir mein, na masjid mein, na kashi kailash mein. You know, he goes on to say that, why are you looking for me in temples and places and prayer? He says, Khoji hoye turat mil ja is pal ki talash mein. Kahe Kabir, suno bhai sadho, main to hoon. Vishwas mein, he says, stop all this. I am in faith. And he says, sab shwasan ki shwas mein. हर इंसान की हर सांस में हूँ. That's what Kabir says. Or you look at Rabia al-Basri, female Sufi mystic from Iran, who said, you know, in my soul there is a temple, a shrine, a church, a mosque that dissolve in God. Prayer should bring us to an altar where no walls or names exist. In my soul there is a temple, a shrine, a church, a mosque that dissolve in God. Look at this, all of these people at different times saying the same thing.
So true. You know, they say that religion actually is the banana skin, while spirituality is the main banana, the true nutrition for the soul. And your project in itself, you know, it just shows what spiritual journey you are on, you know, and also getting everybody together through this project of yours. What role has spirituality played in your life, in your music, in your passions, in your personal life?
You know, it's really funny when you say even spiritual journey, I don't think I've ever realized even that I'm on a journey. So it's not something I have been searching for. It's strange. I mean, I feel very, very connected to a greater power, and that power changes definition. It changes. So after my parents passed away, it's funny that the lines between God and them got blurred, you know. So sometimes when I close my eyes, I think of them. But I've always, as a little girl, had this conversation going with God. And there have been times I've been angry when I lost my parents. There have been times I've wished more would have happened. But it's strange. I feel a very, very, very deep connection. At the same time, I don't try and preach spirituality, right? I don't try and, you know, say that someone must live their life like this, or you must, you know, not have attachment or whatever. I think for me, my music is my connection to God. So I often say my music is my ibadat, which is why if I go to a friend's house and they say, acha gana suna do, no matter how hard I try, I can't sing just for the sake of singing anymore. Maybe when I was growing up, I would, but I remember even as a child feeling quite uncomfortable when someone asked me to do that. And initially I thought I was just shy, but I realized later that I wasn't shy. It just had to be when I was in a space for prayer that I could sing. So before I get onto stage, or if I'm sitting down to do riyaz, there's got to be a certain space that's created for me, a certain atmosphere I create. So whether it's in my own house, then it's quiet and there's nobody else and I'm sitting, it's just me and the music. And even on stage, it's just me and the music in many ways. But it's got to be ibadat. So that's the only spirituality, I think, that I really, it's my very private spirituality. The other thing that I think that has always been with me, and again, I'd say it's because of the way I've grown up, is compassion has been important. Like I said, as I grow older, and I feel like the greatest quality that anyone must possess is kindness. So if you're not kind, that to me is a problem, you know, if you're not a kind person. Kindness to animals is a big thing as far as I'm concerned, because it shows me, if you have it in your heart to be kind to animals, then you're going to be kind to people as well, because you're being kind to voiceless creatures. You know, when I see the nastiness that sometimes people inflict upon animals, that really breaks my heart, or even on the environment. You know, when you think that you're entitled to everything on this earth, that bothers me. So my connection to spirituality is a strange, deeper connection, like I said, to my music, to the earth, to the creatures on the earth. So my spirituality, or my mode, my brand, or my understanding of spirituality is really empathy, compassion, and kindness. And it's not rooted in anything other than these three very simple things.
Yeah, so these days, are you listening to any particular kind of music? I'm very curious, because what do you listen to besides your own music and songs?
Actually, I don't listen to my own music at all. No. I don't listen to my own music at all, because I find it very stressful, because all I do is then say, oh God, I should have done this differently and I could have done this like this. So I never listen to my own music. What have I been listening to lately? I have actually, strangely enough, been listening to a lot of nursery rhymes, because I have my 2.5-year-old who is, so literally I've been listening to, and I have 2 1-year-olds. I have twins and a 2.5-year-old. It's a crazy house. So I'm listening to a lot of When You're Happy and, you know, it, Clap Your Hands. And actually, it's quite sweet, because it's a reminder. of how easy it is to be happy. Because when you see three little children clapping their hands just because of music, I'm reminded of how much joy music gives me. So I've been listening to that. I'm listening to some Sujatha Saab. I'm listening to Lajo Lajo. It's one of his renditions that I absolutely love. I've been listening to Kumarji, you know, Ur Jayega Hans Akela. I'm also listening to that beautiful bhajan of his, which is Ram Niranjan Nyara Re, which is beautiful. I'm listening to a little bit of Ella as well these days. She plays. I've been listening to a lot of Pavarotti. I really love him. But yeah, so as I said, I'm listening to all these greats that I love and mixed with nursery rhymes. And yeah, so I don't know what will come out of any of this stuff, but I always know that what you listen to, what you expose yourself to, what you experience, sparks some form of an idea in your head. So I don't know. Maybe I'll do something for animals next.
Yeah, I remember attending one of Abida Praveen's concert, and you've performed along with her, right? And I've heard so much about it.
Same stage, yes.
How was it? Because I remember it was electrifying. It was an open air. I don't know which one of the forts.
Jahane Khusro at Humayun's Tomb.
Tell us about that experience.
So it was absolutely fantastic because growing up, I used to attend that same festival, which is Muzaffar Ali Ji's Jahane Khusro. And it was the most beautiful. Firstly, as you've seen, the setting is stunning. It's this open air section of Humayun's tomb. There's a beautiful arch in the background. Muzaffar Sahab creates the most spectacularly, beautifully aesthetic stage. And Abida Ji used to be flanked by this, you know, arch in the back. And she would lift her arms and she would say, Ali or Mola. And, you know, you felt like, ab aur kisi cheez sunne ki zarurat bhi nahi hai, because it was just, the minute she started singing, it was perfection and completion in itself. Never in my life had I imagined that I would be on that stage. And I remember when Muzaffar Sahab called me and said, I'd like you to perform. I think I almost fainted with excitement and joy. And I was so nervous when I went and met him. And with him, it's a very interesting process of working as well, because he shares pieces of poetry with you. You discuss them, you choose, you decide upon a piece of poetry, and then you work together to create, you know, the pieces. And he kind of just knows where he wants it to go, and he allows you also to, you know, steer it in the direction you want. It's a lovely collaborative process. And so I was going to be on just before Abida Ji on day 3, which is the finale day. And I was super nervous. So I didn't perform with her, but I performed just before her. For me, the pressure was, I was like, why will anyone want to hear me when they know Abida Ji is on next? I'll be like, I was so nervous. And I remember going to her backstage and she was practicing in her green room. And I went and I touched her feet to say, aap mujhe aashirwad de dijiye because aapke pehle gaane wali hoon. And she was, I think when I bent down to touch her feet, I was so excited that I was half lying down on the floor with excitement. And she was so cute. I mean, she could have just patted me on the head and said, you know, jeete raho. And that would have been enough for me. That would have been more than enough. She bent down. She lifted me up by my shoulders. She gave me the biggest hug. And she told me that God will watch over you and you have nothing to worry about. I heard your sound check and you sound beautiful. And I mean, to get that kind of love, to get that kind of blessing. And, you know, it was done with so much humility. Those were 3 quick lessons I learned from her, that, you know, no matter how big you get, always have time for other people. No matter how great you are as a musician, stay humble. I just literally, I saw her and I had these 3 little things that I learned instantly. And when I went onto that stage, I remember climbing onto that stage. And it's, as I said, it's so beautiful. You climb on from the back and as you emerge onto the stage, the audience kind of opens up in front of you and unfolds. And as I put my first barefoot step on that stage, I can tell you, Shailja, my whole world was in equilibrium. I felt like I was not there. It was an out-of-body experience. I felt like I was completely in a different zone, a different place, and singing that whole time was very, very special for me. And when I finished, we got a standing ovation, which was just incredible. Muzaffar Saab came up to the stage, held my hand. It was really... And then I sung on many other occasions, of course, for Jahane Khusro. And each time Abida Ji was just after me. So, you know, I got to spend time with her as well. But it was just... I mean, that experience was very special. In fact, I remember being on such a high that was, I think, possibly the 8th of March or something, and a couple of weeks later I was singing in Jodhpur where Sting was going to be in the audience, the musician Sting. But I think I was on such a high, having, you know, been on the same stage as Abidaji and having met her and having had this wonderfully successful concert before Abidaji, that when I met Sting, it took me another 4 or 5 days to register, because he walked up to me after I'd sung and he said, you know, that was a wonderful concert. It took me a couple of days to realize even that, to take it in, because I wasn't done with assimilating Abidaji. And I was like, how can I assimilate what Sting has just said? But it was a great month, I remember. It was the month of March a few years ago, and it was wonderful. But you know, just coming back to one very important point, it's something I say to all musicians, and I think I would say it to all, anybody who has any kind of a skill or a gift, is that to remember that the gift is not there because of you. You are there because of the gift. So never ever assume yourself to be bigger than it, because you will lose it the day you disrespect it. You will lose it if you don't understand the value of it. So for me, you know, I mean, I know that I have this most special, incredible gift of music in my life. So I must respect and value it. And I must never, ever let arrogance or ego, you know, come in the way of that relationship that I have with that gift.
It's so beautiful, because what you just said resonates with something, you know, I just made a video a couple of days ago on that the gift which you have is actually not for you, it's for the world, right? And if you
my mother also always said,
yeah,
that.
And if you found that, then that's your ikigai, because it's going to give you so much energy that universal energy will come and support you to give it back to the world. And that's exactly what you're saying, right? You have to take care of it. You're a caretaker of something very divine and very precious.
And you must use it for good. I mean, I say this to artists. Use, if you've been given a gift, if you're in a position where you can be heard, then use that space for good. Use it for the greater good of the community. Use it to speak out for the voiceless. You know, use it to speak out against injustice. Use it to spread good messages. Use it for the right reasons. Don't use it for selfish reasons, you know.
And, you know, our listeners should know that you've also played at the iconic Sydney Opera House, the Pyramids of Giza, the Royal Opera House at Cairo, Coke Studio India, of course. I've been listening to lots of your songs there. Muzaffar Ali's Jahane Khusro, the legend like Abida Praveen, which we just spoke about, and Sir Bob Geldof. So I see humility through and through. Sonam, you have achieved so much, and the way you talk about it is actually that you're just taking care of something so precious and you want to just share it with the world. It is such a spiritual experience just talking to you, you know, the last half an hour. I can't even tell you how many times I've had goosebumps.
Thank you. You're so sweet, Shalra. I mean, that is just so sweet and kind of you. I'm very, very touched by everything that you've said.
Any message you want to give, Sonam, to all the women out there who are listening to this show? And the genesis of the show was all about women who might feel the labels and the roles which they play in life might constrain them. And I think you've given enough tips and insights into your life, how you've kept the flame burning, how you kept it kindled. So, you know, it's come so naturally to you. But do you have any message for the women out there?
I think I just want to tell the women who are listening to not be so hard on themselves. You know, as women also, we are very exacting. We have very exacting standards of ourselves. We want to be great at everything. And the fact is, we are great at a lot. So don't be so hard on yourself. Don't put yourself down about weight. Don't put yourself down about not being a good mom, not being a good wife, not being a good daughter, not being a good friend. Trust a little bit in yourself. Understand that you are the whole world in this beautiful vessel that is the woman. Because honestly, I don't think there is anything more special on this planet than a woman, because she has the ability to be fierce yet gentle. She has the ability to be strong and compassionate. She has the ability to love and nurture and protect. I mean, how could you have wanted for anything more? As I said, as Rumi said, you are a creator. So trust in yourself, be kinder to yourself. Also live for yourself. Make a lot of choices that make you happy. Because and this is for any human being, if you are happy, you will be able to make other people happy. Stop worrying so much about what the world says. honestly, at the end of each day, you just have to answer to yourself. You have to know you did right by yourself, you did right by the world, but just answer to yourself. Don't worry so much. I think just we worry too much about perfection. We just have to enjoy being women. We really are, I don't even say this lightly, we are a very special species, and we need to accept that, and we need to nurture that, and take pride in all that you are. You know, beautiful, accomplished, all of the things that you are, but start to see them. Start to see them through your own eyes and start to love yourself.
Thank you so much, Sonam. It was lovely having you on the show. And thank you for all the life insights. They are precious.
No, thank you for being such an amazing woman yourself. It's really every interaction I have with you is lovely. And I'm always excited by something new you're going to do, because I know you always have these wonderfully thoughtful ideas, and I'm very happy to be a part of any and all of them.
Thank you so much. Thank you, and wish you all the best.
Thank you. Lots of love to you, and lots of love to all the women, and have a wonderful festive season, guys. Have a super, super time, and stay safe.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks for tuning in. Join us again next week for more inspirational stories from Unstoppable Women.